interrupting the current neo-uchronio. Climate challenge, behaviorally controlled, energy-starved, alien-invaded, nuclear-glowing, postulated cricketism to bring behind the woodshed. This is Cricketude Busting episode BTWRLM 638. And remember, being free is not a spectator sport. It's also something you got to kind of get through to not be the spectator. Tis the season for those of you with an above-ground swimming pool, or you know someone who might have one. There's a BTW PSA recall issued for 5.2 million pools after child drowning deaths. Compression straps on outside of pools may create a foothold for small children. Just a reminder this time of year. More than 5.2 million above-ground swimming pools sold across the U.S. and Canada over the last two decades are being recalled after 9 drowning deaths were reported. The recall covers a range of Bestway, Intex, Recreation, and Polygroup pools that were sold by major retailers as far back as 2002. According to Monday notices published by the U.S. Consumer Product Safety Commission and Health Canada, these pools have compression straps running along the outside of the product, which may create a foothold for small children and allow them to access the water unattended. The deaths occurred between 2007 and 2022, involving children between the ages of 22 months and 3 years old. Consumers in possession of these pools are urged to immediately contact Bestway, Intex, or a Polygroup to receive a free repair kit, which will consist of a rope to replace the compression strap. Owners of these pools should otherwise ensure that small children cannot access the pool without supervision, regulators note, and could alternately drain the pool until the repair is made. All the pools being recalled are 48 inches or taller and can be identified by brand and model names listed on both the CPSCS and Health Canada recall notices site. So notice sales of the pools range by model and location, but date as far back as 2002, as I said before, as this report is going on to remind us, and as recently as this year. So pay attention on all these things. Like I said, I was doing a lot more recalls, but it just became such a task that I just decided to drop most of them. These, maybe you didn't know about it, and I don't know if anybody got a notice about it. So drowning deaths have been happening all my life, and it just seems to be something that I thought maybe I'd like to tell you all about. And I'll look around. It's just not about those pools. Just look for the water hazards that are around. Little ones tend to want to get into those areas and cause themselves some trouble. And instead of being brave and wearing water wings to weather the storm of the faulty construction, your cut-and-run compromised Congress critters continue the cat box cover-up, as we hear the House is shutting down early over Epstein drama. Republicans block votes to ward off Epstein's amendments and will recess on Wednesday. And before I read more, anyone excited that the Trumpster can use his recess appointments authority? Apparently Johnson's going to end the recess about every 4 or 5 days to interfere with that. So he can't go unilaterally to make his appointments when they were in recess. And how that actually interferes, those 4 or 5 days, I'm not absolutely sure. But that is apparently the tactic as the legislature attempts to thwart the recess appointments that were anticipated. The House is putting the Jeffrey Epstein controversy on the back burner until at least September. House Speaker Mike Johnson said Tuesday that the chamber will begin its summer recess earlier than expected on Wednesday to avoid political games. Political games indeed. Sounds like one right there, doesn't it? Apparently we the people finding out who and how the function of government is compromised or usurped is worthy of being put out on the back burner by the North 42, maybe. You think Speaker Johnson's first duty is to America first? Those of you doing research in the background of this? And don't expect any votes on releasing the Epstein files to sneak in before then. Republicans on the House Rules Committee are preventing virtually all votes from reaching the House floor because they fear Democrats will lack an Epstein-related any amendments. Yes, because this Epstein outrage just won't kill itself. Democrats, meanwhile, have been happy to make GOP colleagues go on the record as opposing the record's release. Quote, we certainly won't refrain from pointing that out as long as they continue to perform this cell phone time and time again, and, as Democrat Representative Sarah McRide said, to which the House Majority Leader, Steve Scalise, responded, quote, where were these interested Democrats for 4 years when they could have released all of it? They have no credibility because they had no desire to release it when they were in control. So yes, the unit party of the compromise. Infighting over nothing, actually. They aren't going to get interested in what they ought to be doing. And you see, the Democrats can take this position even where some, if not all, are involved because the needed information will not be released. So this, again, this political games, as Johnson says he ostensibly wants to get rid of. But, of course, it's not only Democrats pushing for the release of records. GOP Representative Thomas Massey of Kentucky has repeatedly pressed for a vote. Quote, let me just say about Thomas Massey, and could you just accept my Southern bless his heart? I don't know what else to say about it, said Johnson. Such contempt for Congress, says Speaker Johnson, it seems to me. He also knows Massey's request is a threat. Massey being probably one of the few we could trust as far as looking objectively at things. He may be, if I get it right, he's the only non-APAC promoted representative right now who Trump is actually moving against. Republican that Trump is moving against in the next election here. Separately, a top Justice Department official plans to speak with the imprisoned Maxwell in the coming days. And this is looking like the real threat, actually, to the Epstein file disclosures to us, we the people. They can essentially make a deal with Ghislaine Maxwell, the Madame trafficking victims to no clients, and all that evidence can be essentially buried, and all the pedophiles go unpunished. Remember, it's just us for the victims, not just this. And the likely foreign system of operatives and sympathizers compromising government decision makers continues unexposed, thanks to Trump and his Florida fixer, Pam Bondi. That'll make America great again. Won't it? And only stupid people would be concerned with the integrity and trustworthiness of government purported to be of, by, and for the people, right, Trumpenstein? And I'm pointing all this out that just maybe Trump will see the immense error in his ways, reverse course, and become the man he promotes himself to being. And that's because he pulls up a chair and listens close behind the woodshed, just like my dedicated listener does. So have I mentioned that this is likely the most censored broadcast and network on the interwebs? Yes, it is. Now over 200 syndication accounts deleted, gone, as I'm told. No warning, no appeal, no response from the unfree speech of Rumble management propagandizing itself as free speech media. Yeah, not so much on all that. Not at all. But it says so, despite the truth, for your mentally programmed buy-in. So to counter that deceptive cover for censorship and corporate speak, why don't we have you find a donate button, donate today to reallibertymedia.com, and keep this voice behind woodshed at Real Liberty Media, and non-dependent of corporate Wall Street speak. Find the donation buttons again, please. Contribute today. Any quality content providers out there listening in, get a link here to hear this broadcast and this request. Get with Sound Minds for a place on the schedule. Bring your content to the network here. Thank you all for what you can do to bring the information along. This is becoming, as I'm looking more and more, this is going down the track that I thought it might. I don't think this is one of those things, I've wished and saw it. It is. This is the setup to take us down, and the voices, the open voices, are going to be cut off slowly over time as we're watching. You can watch the incrementalness of the real ID, the verification, the age verification, and all these types of things as the slow locking up of this whole system, where we're going to have to find alternatives. And likely going to have to go, if it's possible, I'm noticing now the government's making errors to go into, let's say, the dark web, they call it. Well, within that space, there's a lot of places to go. And what I've been hoping we could do at Real Liberty Media, and work is being done to try and bring this to fruition over time, is to be able to access that. And we do that each our own to access that spot, that place. And so there's nobody, no overseer that can control us on how we move about the sewers of the internet, as we saw, and because The Matrix is not a movie. And while all this pile goes on for decades-long governmental cover-ups, as we see these Epstein files just being covered over, we also have the other files that haven't been up now being dumped upon each other as we see all these things coming together as well. We're being told, the headline is, Martin Luther King assassination files released. But as we know, is it all of them? Are they what we need to see? Can we see them? Well, we go read it, we'll find that out. Now, do the Epstein files, the daughter of the civil rights icon Bernice King said. Exactly. The administration of the U.S., the President Donald Trump, has released thousands of government files related to assassination of civil rights icon Martin Luther King Jr. Around 240,000 pages were posted on Monday on the National Archives website, which promised more releases. So, no, you didn't get the release yet of the files. And, again, they sit behind this idea that they need to go through the files to redact, and I think that's one of the major violations. I don't think that, at this point, there's anything that's redactable, because we, the people, need to see what's been going on all this time, and probably because it hasn't been uncovered, it leads us till today with the situation with the files with Epstein. If, again, we don't know what those files are. We don't know what the evidence is. To me, it's not just files. It's evidence. As I said last episode, where is the government's DOJ, the Department of Justice, doing the forensic audit of everything they had to make sure all his statuses were right, where he got his money, how he got his money? What about the victims of all this crime that went on? What about that? Nothing. We got none of that. Where are those files? And without that, we can know pretty well we've got a government internally that is, there's no way to fix it, essentially. I guess I'll get right to that point. Now, this story tells us, oh, we get the MLK files. Oh, no, just 240,000 pages. They'll release more. Drip, drip, drip. Cat box cover up, paw by paw pool, as they attempt to pile on and make it very difficult to keep things straight. And we need to, all this stuff's important. We can't let any of it go down. And we can't let one thing rise above any others, even as they bring on more of the so-called Russiagate. That's very important, but, again, it's being used apparently to persuade us away from as important, at least as important things, even 50, 60 years late. National Intelligence Director Tulsi Gabbard said the files include FBI memos, case leads, and notes of Ray's former cellmate and overseas intelligence from the manhunt after Ray fled to the UK. It remains unclear whether the files reveal new information about King's personal life. But as I noticed myself thinking, this is a spoon-fed release as well, isn't it? As if they want to guide us in our studies, in our research, as we are, it might be interested. In part, I'll let you know, I'm not that interested anymore. I think the fact that we haven't got these files tells us a whole lot of what all we need to know about what the government is and what needs to be done. I don't think we need to know a whole lot more about that. There's enough law in the books in order to make this thing have come along, and we see the facade put over the so-called republic, where it was by, for, and of the people, over and over and over again. Anyway, they're still spoon-feeding us. We still basically accept it, and what are we going to do, ultimately? So, as I said, for my part, I'm not interested in the MLK's personal life either. I've heard stories, I've seen some of the reports, I've read all that was going on. He wasn't the greatest guy either. And this is what they do. And this is how they puff people up. And I think what I've seen of his personal life, there's been plenty exposed about his personal life that I don't need to really see a whole lot more. Maybe there's some other interesting things. But that's not what my interest is. I don't know what the interest of my listener is. But we've got a very big corruption problem. We've been sold into a system. And it just doesn't seem to fulfill itself at any point. And that we get these characters come on the kabuki stage of government. And they do their pit part, and they get taken out, and we get the assassination scene, and then we cover up how that was all done. The script writers keep that from us. And then they want to tease out, oh, we're going to know a little bit about the personal life. Well, I don't really need to know that. I want to know why the guy was murdered by the government, why the CIA had done that. Was he just a dupe, too? And if they're going to do it then, they'll do it now. And I think that's what we see generally. And I think that's why Epstein didn't kill himself, has any legs at all. Whether he did or not. I don't even think we're talking about that when we make that statement. We're talking about the criminals in government that purport to be the white hats that aren't. Now, given what you know about civil rights and what it means, but you can see that at 42 U.S.C. 1981, what the high-sounding propagandistic statements toward universal equal rights, the indenturement of extortions of every kind and to no other. When King said, "I have a dream that one day this nation will rise up and live out the true meaning of its creed. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, and that my four little children will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but the content of their character, where character is the subject, slave status of a society where the color of one's skin is irrelevant to your subject-slave status. Yes, even white citizens suffer equally," clearly enumerated since Lincoln's time. This is at 42 U.S.C. 1981. You need to all read it. If you read that and you start to apply that to what King said, he said it's a whole lot different than what people think he said. And so they're not even, the system, they are not even lying to us when they say this stuff. They're actually educating us if we knew what we're listening for. Now, I want to know if MLK was part of a government psyop to get the population to embrace their serfdom to the plantation masters, or was he just one of the homegrown, extrajudicially murdered by his government, or once he fulfilled his part in the charade and the elimination of a collaborator, right, Obama? How about it, Trump? Is that what we're seeing right here? In a separate post, Bernice King addressed another controversial writing on X. Quote, "Now do the Epstein files," referencing the claims of the cover-up in the case of convicted sex offender Jeffrey Epstein. "Critics have slammed the administration's handling of the case. The Justice Department released the Epstein Files Phase 1 in February, but the heavily redacted documents revealed little new information, and I suspect it was all that new information was sitting in those redactions. And if we look through and parse that, if any of us have done that, it starts to point to a nation, if you will, a group of people, I don't like to call them a nation, or a state, and a certain infiltration that went on way in before the 50s, coincident with the establishment of that state into this country, and subsequent to the assassination of a president. But the Capitol Hill heat pile goes the cat litter cover-up, as we watched going on, the redactions, not by the color of their skin, either through black or white out, is still a felony coercion of your right to know relative to your constitutional right to alter or abolish corrupt government, if you have the right, and work the enslaved civil rights character. Remember, it's equal rights under law. You're all equally treated by it. Your abiding obligation to government, Martin Luther King dreamed for you, which nevertheless had already been the law for about 100 years, roughly, but needed people to embrace the civil rights that they don't understand. Do you actually need the MLK files to see the chosen, the very elect cockistocracy that rules you by your consent equally under law? Or by your murder, if it suits the men in black suits? You shall know them by their fruits, because they don't have to tell you, right, Francis Lieber? Trump ordered the release of a grand jury testimony last Friday, but stopped short of unsealing the full case file, which many believe includes the names of the high-profile Epstein associates. Actually, that was a requested release, and the judge said, no, there's rules that you can't unseal grand jury testimony. So that's done, and I'm not so sure if it'll be overturned or not, but again, Trump asked for something that's not available to him. They make it sound like he had a choice to do that. That was a totally different branch of government. Couldn't do that anyway, but it is a cockistocracy, as I said, the worst, rising to the top to rule over you through extortion as a matter of law. Go read it. Who'd have thunk it, folks? Go read it. 42 U.S.C. 1981. You're voluntarily enslaved. Neo-feudal serf. Now, what are you going to do about it? And the crickets isn't an answer. Interrupting the current neo-Ukrainian climate challenge, behaviorally controlled, energy-starved, alien-invaded, nuclear-glowing, postulated cricketism is what's ruling at this point. Gee, where did I ever heard that before? Also, Johnson, the U.S. no longer wants to be involved in a war on Ukraine. Quote, everything has been going on for too long. Too many innocent people were dying. We absolutely do not want the United States to be further involved in all this. We hope it will end soon. We trust the commander-in-chief. He restores peace through strength, Johnson said. What do you mean going on for too long? The United States started this in 2014 when it overthrew the democratically elected government of Ukraine and installed Pinocchio-Linsky. Besides, peace through strength means funding the military-industrial complex and acting like a bully. Makes either of these a disingenuous interest of the speaker towards peace. But he didn't say he was interested in peace, did he? No. We absolutely do not want the United States to be involved further in all this. Does not show any interest in peace, and neither do the actions of the president. No, the Trump administration wants to toss its hot tater that Putin will decide the doneness of to NATO to pay for, to fight to the last Ukrainian, which removal of its inhabitants will take about as long as it takes Israel to annex all the land, all the way up to Ukraine, back to their origins, as it just annexed the West Bank, just cause, right, Satan Yehu, Milikowski? And where the Zionist Federation political movement operating under the cultural appropriation of being Jewish is committing genocide, ethnic cleansing, coincidentally to the last Palestinian, as the Ukraine issue. Interesting how these plans just so work together, don't they? Which is soon here in Ukraine to be Maidan 2.0. Trump's associates amid protests on Ukraine is required to expel Zelensky. No more grace for him, it seems. Not at all. After yesterday's protest rallies that swept through major cities in of the Ukraine, Republican Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene called Volodymyr Zelensky a dictator. That's that hot tater being thrown around. Dictator. And called on the people of Ukraine to kick him out. She wrote, huge, huge protests erupting Kiev against Ukrainian President Zelensky as he is a dictator and refuses to make a peace deal and end the war. Good for the Ukrainian people. Throw him out of office. And America must stop funding and sending weapons. To which I replied, so the U.S. installed him after a U.S. Maidan coup in 2014. So these protests must be Maidan coup 2.0. Do you know yet who the U.S. is replacing Zelensky with that won't be for endless war? And you know I was hoping I could remove the nuclear glowing from the intro when Trump was big-talking being a peacemaker. But the duplicitous peace faker he is turning out to be doesn't look like I'm going to be able to remove that nuclear glowing because his woke Secretary of War just let the Pentagon quietly return nuclear bombs to UK for the first time since 2008. I'm hoping you're pulling together what's starting to form up here relative to what's going on in Ukraine and Pinocchio-Linsky and all that stuff. This is still very serious stuff that's going on. I don't see a peacemaker anywhere. And if it was a hint, Putin decides when this is done. And they've already laid out what has to happen for that to be. This is not a question. I've said it over and over. Instead of Trump saying doesn't like what he sees, he has to first admit to what he's going to have to see. And I told you he's got no cards. More and more people are starting to see it. He's got no cards. Zelensky has no cards. Ukraine's got no cards. They get lots of money and bombs, though. But Ukraine is sitting there as this dummy for the West, if you call it the West, to go into Ukraine and go after, through Ukraine as an excuse to go after Russia. And now we see the peacemaker through his agent, the woke Hegseth, giving nuclear weapons back to the UK, which is now being found out to be the prime planner for the attacks against Russia through Ukraine. The United States has reportedly returned its nuclear weapons, including an unspecified number of B-61-12 thermonuclear gravity bombs to the British Lake Heath Air Force Base in Suffolk, the UK Defense Journal reported, citing multiple sources. For the first time since at least 2008, the United States has transported weapons from the United States Air Force Nuclear Weapons Center in Kirkland Air Force Base in New Mexico to a newly established secure storage facility in Suffolk, UK. The Lakenheath Base stored U.S. nuclear weapons during the Cold War, with their removal occurring in 2008 as part of a disarmament initiative. Remember, Trump is one of the few people, and the United States government is getting rid of those nuclear protective treaties and agreements. The potential reintroduction of nuclear bombs to Europe coincides with the worsening relations between NATO and Russia, particularly due to the ongoing conflict in Ukraine and the military alliance's efforts to enhance its readiness. The B-61 12 bomb. I said B-61-12 bomb. The B-61-12 bomb is an enhanced version of the B-61 nuclear bomb, featuring advanced guidance systems and varying yield capabilities. As a key element of the United States strategic nuclear arsenal, it is designed for deployment through various delivery systems, including the F-35A Lightning II aircraft and other platforms. So now the UK is a definite nuclear target. For those of you living in the UK or nearby, realize that. Wasn't it a couple of weeks ago that Trump said he liked the King of Britannia very much? What did he actually mean? Did he actually mean that? And on the heels of last episode, and Texas making gold and silver illegal tender, but my caution is a digital caveat. The consumerism millstone is spreading. The digital attachment looks to be a trap, as I heard and was talking to you about last week. Remember, they want to go to digital, gold-backed digital. That's the millstone attachment. That the state will be controlling everything under the lure of a gold-backed, but not gold, medium. And this all starts to sound no different than that basket of currencies I talked about relative to global monetization, the unit, or the IMF-promoted unicorn, or the unicoin. New state laws encourage consumers to pay with gold. Measures allowing using digital platforms backed by precious metals. Paying for groceries with gold coins may sound like a quaint scene from a bygone era, but new laws in several states are reviving precious metals as currency. I just need to interject I could trust that you hear this. Sometimes people don't put it together, and I'm only getting that from sometime when I do get comments. You're not putting, some of you don't listen so closely enough to what's actually been going down. This is a technique that gets you back into that nostalgic ish matter where you're using these golds, and yet this is nothing like that at all. And so this is what I've been watching coming on, and I have no problem with making gold and silver legal tender as the material, the metal, the coin. What I do not like is what they've now done, the sleight of hand going on. And I'm saying this a little bit because I've watched some people who have advocated for sound money. In fact, Missouri is one of the states that I'm going to talk here to in the article. But they haven't commented that this is a digital back. And if this is, they don't understand the danger. And so this is very serious what's going on. It's a sleight of hand going on. I want people to pay attention. And they bring this up in this paragraph. Paying for gold with gold coin may sound like a quaint scene from a bygone era. And there's your nostalgic connection to what's going to be transformed into your Siberian gulag. Oh, it's such more convenient. So easy, folks. You don't have to carry all that heavy gold around and be robbed. And again, as I say that, what's wrong with the debit card that we have now? You don't need to have any ID. Just go, you got the debit card, just use it. But that's not what this is about either. Missouri, Texas, Florida, and Arkansas are opening the door to residents to use gold and silver much like cash. Under the measures, precious metals are being recognized as legal tender, with supporters arguing the moves will help people hedge against inflation and sidestep swings in stock market. The shoppers won't be lugging bars into the store. Instead, the idea is to make it easier to use gold investments through digital platforms and debit cards, potentially bypassing capital gains tax. So that's the little hook they throw on into it. But listen to what they've just done there. It's easier to use gold investments. That's buying into the fiat system. This is not gold and silver at all now. And I'm asking everyone to consider to force, like forcing cash, even though it's fiat. When you go to silver and gold, go to coin. Go to hard currency. Do not go to digitization. The push reflects broader concerns over the dollar's recent decline in skepticism toward federal monetary policy. So they throw in another reason, another risk to cause you to buy into this. That's all true. I'm not saying it's a lie. I'm saying that that's what they're using in order to get you to think that we want to go back to gold and silver, but we're going to do it in this new form. So simple, so easy, much cheaper, they might tell you. People want different ways to pay, different ways to hedge against inflation, says Mike Carter, who lobbied for the changes. Well, that might be true. Again, he's got two parts in that sentence, that one little sentence. We would like to have a hedge against inflation, but we don't have to have it based on different ways to pay, first of all. Secondly, we do want to have different ways to pay. Why not? Why is it such a question? The question becomes, what's the attachments? As I said about the CBDC, which is going to be the stable coins, and I'll be talking a little bit about that this episode. Why is there underlying attachments to all this? See, they're not free. And the CBDC had a third-party liability you were going to be attaching yourself to that they decided whether you met. And that's what the stablecoin problem becomes. They don't call it CBDC, and it isn't even a CBDC, but it functions identical to a CBDC. It's still a third-party in control. People want different ways to pay. Sure, why not? Debit cards, cool. That's great. Just walk in, get a piece of plastic. Someone has a register somewhere that understands the ledger, and it debits one side and credits the other. Great. Pays cash, pays out. Great. Got coins, you got cash. Why not? Used to be bubblegum and puka shells. But there was no underlying blockchain. There was no underlying servitude, millstones that attach to it, to the state or some government entity or some non-government organization. You'll see the NGOs in the 42 USC 1981 as well. Go read down around Section C. Read for that. The NGO cannot remove this extortion that the government has. You'll see right there. They aren't going to have the power to remove the extortion the government has equally applied to all, everyone. When Florida initiated its process last month, Governor Ron DeSantis said, you're going to be able to conduct transactions in these precious metals. But the new rules may not have much practical effect. Gold value fluctuates, and using it for everyday shopping could trigger larger tax bills than selling stock does. Quote, who wants to hold the money that is taxed? Asked economist Gabriel Mathey, who sees these laws as symbolic gestures. Well, in one way they are. They're getting your buy-in, but they're not symbolic in what they're training you into doing. New technology lets users buy, sell, or spend gold electronically, with the companies like GlintPay offering debit cards backed by gold reserves. However, issues remain about regulation, consumer protections, and the impact on state revenues. And the main thing I say about this is that they're also tying the problems that the government put on. The government caused the problems of taxing gold if it's a profit. That's not, should not ever have been determined to be a profitable thing, especially if it's money. That's partly why you have to remove the taxation on it. You also have to should remove the penalties on it. And my suggestion would be to point out that these are penalties you're putting on someone's labor from the past. That's how that gold and silver coin exists. Some man or woman dug it out of the ground somehow. And they did it from a private property to do that. And so if you've been listening behind the woodshed all these years and years, you've been hearing me making that connection. And the precedent, again, the precedent that's been made by the court is a bogus precedent. It's an unconscionable precedent. When they didn't look at the property aspect and where that, it's actually granting that precious metal in the form of a coin over. What they've done is they've said, well, the government got a hold of it, so that now is a benefit by the government that's causing a problem that we have to tax. Totally bogus. So there's a lot of work here, but the thing is we have to get our mindset on how we're going to go about doing this so that we can start freeing ourselves from these little attachments. And what's really going on is they're moving us from gold and silver, the old idea of gold coin and silver coin, they're moving us into the digital framework that's being set up. And as I've said, it's all essentially based in taxation, your civil right. Some officials worry about fraud, transaction disputes, and lost dollars. Let me just interject on that. That's none of the state's business. Relative to the government, yeah, if you look at government, federal government's rules and regulations, it's all the penalties are really about fraud you commit against government, not between people at the federal level. So we can do a lot of scary boogeyman stuff, but we're all supposed to be adults that know what we're doing. And yes, that's where the exploitation comes from, but we better start giving ourselves the edge by saying, no, we will take on the responsibility. As I said last episode, the problem the government found was the hoarding of gold because people were going to good money. They were hoarding the good money and spending the bad. We can't hoard. Can't give the government the reason to do that. We need to use the use. It's coming, again, the word use also is a trust. It's coming from the use of the land made that silver and gold coin. Remember, it was the use of extraction of the precious metal that was enabled the patentee to gain that patent. So this is all consistent, and I think this line of authority has been totally negated by the courts and lost or misinterpreted or lied about. We're so close on the edge, and I see on the edge of getting this done correctly, but here that we see now in the last few weeks, this little attachment that comes along that's not really, really good at all. And all the arguments about why they need to go to the digital. Even supporters acknowledge the major hurdles, like the federal tax law, remain before gold can truly rival the dollar as an everyday currency. So if it is true that the civil right of federal extortion on property and work is permittable, is it clear here that we the people live in an occupied territory? A commerce plantation populated in the land of the fee and home of the slave? Is that what you've been voting for all these decades? And that Trump really didn't remove this federal or cause the legislature to remove this income tax? The laws about against the government interfering with gold? None of that's happening, folks. None of that internal support for the extortion is being removed at all. And I don't hear anybody talking about it. Auditing FARC Knots is irrelevant to me. They get you thinking about it. Oh, you want to know about your daily life. Why don't you have that in your life? Why don't you get that gold and silver in your life that's not extortable by the government? Start there. And here's more evidence that once you are blockchained to the state digital platform, the future identifiers and verifiers don't stop. Again, global. We look at the carnival mirror, of the international carnival mirror, we see what's going on over there. It's happening. It's going to be happening here if it's not already been done in a different form. And that's the warpage of the mirror that we're looking at ourselves, essentially. We can look out there, but we see ourselves. New data will be added to the identity cards of Azerbaijani citizens. President Ilham Aliyev has approved amendments to the law, quote, on identity card of a citizen of the Republic of Azerbaijan. It is noted that at the same time, only the necessary information will be stored on the electronic media chip. In other words, you're going to have this card that I believe that a chip is already on, let's say, your passport document. This is the real ID that's going around. This is all the new digital, I think the new debit cards have something like this on it. They just haven't been actually working it to attach it to anybody. It hasn't yet been a requirement. But here we have a country saying that now we're going, you have this, now you're going, we're going to make this a requirement. In addition to those pieces of information, the marital status of a citizen, parents and children, military duty and other information will now be stored and cryptographically protected, not directly on the electronic media, but through the IAMAS, Interdepartment Automated Information Retrieval System. So you see, it's already developed, folks. And once they get the system in, they just start demanding the information from you. This is the concentrated evil. You can't have one little grain left of it. It's a third rail to we the people, if we ever thought being free was important. A powerful blow to the Fed. Many still don't realize how revolutionary the consequences of the latest initiative of the White House are. Yes, Trump has signed only one law so far, but experience of the rabid printer shows that in a conditions of usurpation of power, even the Senate can push through the law with minimal deviations from the original text as, quote, one big and beautiful. It is important to consider the architecture of the legislation and the consequences. I would like to note that the laws were written by lawyers of the crypto industry, the main beneficiaries of this movement. And let me interject here. This is the same thing I told you about when they were legalizing marijuana, cannabis. And I said, if you go read those laws, you'll see this is written for a particular type of essentially business, corporations that have been given a license to do certain things where they say there's permits that you won't be able to get. And this legalization was made to make profit for companies and corporations. What they gave, the pittance they gave the people was, oh, they're going to regulate it instead of decriminalize it. What they should have done is decriminalize it. And then it's not illegal. There's no legality to it. And this is the same type of thing here. Trump only lobbied, but as usual, he didn't read anything. There are many interesting things in the laws. Firstly, for the first time since 1913, the Fed's monopoly on emissions has been lost, and now part of the issue is being transferred to private hands and in the most uncontrolled form. For the first time, U.S. federal legislation systematically allowed the mass retail issuance of digital quasi-dollar obligations by non-bank issuers directly intended for payment circulation. Now, tie this together with that gold-backed stuff, folks. As you're watching, listen very carefully what they're doing here. And from many different places, this is such an insidious attack. It's quite interesting to watch, but if we had any mind about being free, having our own thoughts, having our own ways, this new attack is going to further diminish that potential and ability. The legislation is designed to regulate the bridge between fiat and crypto, as well as the bundle of dollars with stable coins, the perimeter of the system, but not the core. But categorically, it does not control the mechanism of dollar multiplication, as well as the circulation parameters. The Clarity, a C-L-A-R-I-T-Y Act, intentionally removes developers and operators of centralized protocols from direct regulation, providing them with a safe harbor if they do not control user funds. Secondly, the destruction of the Fed's transmission mechanism and the emergence of a shadow money supply. The White House and Congress have left the DeFi multiplier without direct supervision. This is the main hole. This legitimizes the creation and use of platforms where people and companies can lend each other directly without the involvement of banks. In a significant portion of lending goes to DeFi, the Fed will lose leverage. The rate at which the Fed loans to banks will ceased to affect the rates at which people lend to each other in DeFi. As soon as the token is out of the issuer's wallet, further leverage, remember we're talking about leverage funding, you're going to find out it's about, not about those funds, it's going to be about what they leverage from the funds. The collateral and bridges remain a matter of smart contracts in these matters. DeFi multipliers builds a multiple layered quasi monetary mass on top of an adjustable base. A legitimate liquidity circulation channel is being created outside the contour of the traditional dollar system. Hey, what did we say last episode about gold and silver? They're promoting it as being able to compete with fiat. Well, now convert that just a slight, just step a little bit aside and say, well, this is no digital back. This gold is a digital that's backed by gold. This is what we're really talking about here. As I said, it doesn't sound much different than the SDR, the basket of currency, but now in digital form. Now with 0.25 trillion stables, the market capitalizes over 3.8 trillion. Everything outside the stables, i.e. the multiplier, is more than 15. Over 10 years of the crypto's existence, about 0.25 trillion tango value. Stables have been created in a relatively organized form, with new laws due to institutionalization and legitimization. The issue will go faster as they move this along, probably about 100 to 120 billion per year. So are you going to be able to keep up with all this, folks? Are you going to be able to do that? I don't think so. If the volume of stables DeFi reaches trillions, this invisible mass is capable of both accelerating and collapsing the dollar short market faster than the Fed can turn on traditional instruments. Let me interject here, the word instrument. This is about exactly that and only that. It's just a paper system. I don't care how they regulate that, how they put the form before you to buy into. Thirdly, the Fed is losing its bearings, becoming blind. 24/7 trillions of dollars of transactions go beyond Fedwire and ACH. They are still underway, but the difference is that the now institutions are joining this kitchen. Now it is becoming profitable and faster to make interbank transfers in the crypt rather than through a multi-level audit of banks. Parenthetically, compliance procedures of banks aimed at preventing money laundering, terrorist financing, circumvention of sanctions, and other risks. So, what did that say? Well, they're worried about your $2,000 in the bank because you're a money launderer. This new system will allow the money launderers to get around it. The new legislation creates a legal and easy way for institutional capital to flee, not into the dollar, but from the dollar into decentralized, global, and government-controlled digital commodity. Can we get back to that gold-backed digital token? This undermines the role of the dollar as the main safe haven, even despite 100% reserves of stables, because in the future, the market participants can allocate capital to crypto scams. In this scenario, the stablecoin is not the ultimate goal, but only a transit tool, whereas the ultimate goal is to leave the dollar jurisdiction. Now, remember, go back to that last paragraph before, and it talked global. I've been telling you that global system waits for this. It's been there. It's waiting for all this. This needs time for everybody to come together in the right, again, the parity, so the valuations are consistently and close, easier to manage and keep track of. If a significant part of the global payments, the international transfers, payments for digital services, switch to stablecoins or digital goods, transactions will no longer pass through the American correspondent banks and the SWIFT system. This will reduce the direct daily demand of dollars for operations, weakening its position. As I've said, they have to do that. They have to bring it into parity with the rest of the world. But it's all just a transformation to the global system if we listen very carefully there, isn't it? Just as you've been told behind the woodshed. The Genius Act. Stable coins win, but privacy takes a hit. in the minimum here. But I'll just push this one here today. The U.S. had just embraced crypto, but only if it reports back to the motherland. After years of fumbling around crypto, Congress has finally passed the Genius Act. Genius Act, they call it. The first serious federal legislation aimed at the digital currency world. They've decided to start with the least controversial piece of the puzzle, stablecoins. These are digital tokens pegged to the U.S. dollar. The bill, which glided through the House after clearing the Senate, has now been signed by President Donald Trump. However, there are some aspects of the bill that privacy-conscious readers should be familiar with. The act introduces significant surveillance implications for cryptocurrency users, particularly in the realm of financial privacy. One of the core changes in the bill's treatment of the stablecoin issuers as financial institutions under the Bank Secrecy Act, this designation brings with it mandatory compliance with Know Your Customer and anti-money laundering regulations. Don't forget, if you don't hear that in there, that this is all really the consequence and why we got the PATRT Act with that Know Your Customer provision into it, built right into it. As a result, stablecoin issuers will be required to verify customers' identities, monitor transactions, and report relevant activity to federal authorities. Did you just hear any much different from Azerbaijan? These provisions aim to combat illicit finance, but they also lay the foundation for increased governmental access to individuals' financial data, built on the pretext that you're presumed to be a criminal, that you're dealing in illicit finance, which should have been the news of the century for the Americans. But that's what you've been turned into. Again, you've lost your presumption of innocence. You are presumed to be essentially a business doing illicit activities until you can prove that you're not. Another dimension of concern is the nature of the blockchain technology itself. Public blockchains record every transaction permanently, and while this data is technically pseudo-anonymous, combining blockchain analytics with BSA-mandated identity requirements effectively erodes any practical privacy. Can we throw in the error pronation as well? On top of that, that's going to be used. Once a user's real identity is linked to their blockchain wallet, every past and future transactions can be traced. This surveillance risk extends even further when considering that stablecoins are widely used for peer-to-peer transfers. As more transactions touch regulated stablecoin platforms, the visibility of personal finance behavior increases. And this is where the encroachment is. Again, I've been saying in this network, we're attempting and trying to figure out and making and building a system that likely part of it, at least, is going to be peer-to-peer. And so the government's already there working that angle in order to be able to get its tentacles in through and through it. And again, by your participation. Privacy advocates warn that the surveillance built into the legislation could be expansive and difficult to constrain. What did we just hear from Azerbaijan? They're already asking for maybe 8 or 9 different subject matter areas of information. They're going to add 2 more. It never really stops. For users, this bill shows the importance of understanding how digital transactions may now be surveilled. Financial pseudo-anonymity, long considered a benefit of cryptocurrency, will be increasingly compromised when using stablecoin tied to U.S. regulatory structure. Interactions with regulatory platforms, even if infrequent, could reveal a user's broader transaction history. And as regulatory expectations evolve, further requirements such as real-time tracking or wallet blacklisting may follow. Kind of getting the picture right there? The stablecoin trap. And we've got a couple of these documents that I really think people need to read and see what's going on. Again, I'm really talking about this gold and silver coin, this legal tender. Let's leave it right there at the coin. Don't let them get you into a digital form. This is where it's going. They're already talking about stablecoin being tied to the dollar. They can tie it to anything. Anything you will be agreeable to break down your resistance. You heard, one time. However infrequent you get tied in, you can be tracked and traced. And don't forget all your electronic devices and all the different types of ways that they have to encroach that way. The stablecoin trap, the back door to total financial control. They're not talking about your control, but the control of you. The walls are closing in on your financial freedom, but not in the way that most Americans believe. While the debate rages over the future threat of central bank digital currencies, or CBDCs, a far more insidious reality has already taken hold. Our existing financial system already functions as a digital control grid, monitoring transactions, restricting choices, and enforcing compliance through programmable money. I'm going to bite my tongue on this. I've been wanting to get to this programmable thing. That's what this is still all about. See, there was no difference relative to the CBDC discussion that we had and the implementation of a third-party obligation upon you. For over 2 years, my wife and I have traveled across 22 states warning about the rapid expansion of financial surveillance, these Arthur writes. What began as research into cryptocurrency crackdowns revealed something far more alarming. The United States already operates under what amounts to CBDC. 92% of all U.S. dollars exist only as entries in databases. Your transactions are monitored by government agencies without warrants. Your access to money can be revoked at any time with a keystroke. We interject your relationship to your what you think is your bank and your money. It's not your money. Just look on the note you read. They call it cash. The bill that you throw in, that note is a debt. It says Federal Reserve note. It doesn't say your note. Everyone thinks this is a joke, but this is what they're telling you. And that system you're putting it into is not what you think it is. It's not your cash going into a bank that's in trust to you. It's in trust to the system. And people are finding that out in the last few years. Your access to money can be revoked at any time with a keystroke. And it's gone. Where do we hear that? Cartoons are such interesting things, aren't they? Federal Reserve processes over $4 trillion Tango dollars daily through its Oracle database system. Stargate much? While commercial banks impose programmable restrictions on what you can buy and how you can spend your money. The IRS, NSA, and Treasury Department collect and analyze financial data without meaningful oversight, weaponizing money as a tool of control. This isn't speculation. It's documented reality. Now, as President Trump's Executive Order 14178 ostensibly bans CBDCs, his administration is quietly advancing stablecoin legislation that would hand digital currency control to the same banking cartel that owns the Federal Reserve. The Stable Act, STABLE Act, and Genius, GENIUS Act, don't protect financial privacy. They enshrine financial surveillance into law, requiring strict KYC, know your customer tracking, on every transaction. This isn't defeating digital tyranny, it's rebranding it. I was talking about earlier the reorganization of the tyranny. The technocrat systems, the Stargate story, all that's going on, Palantir. And that's just a little bit of that article. Please get the links, go read it. Familiarize yourself with this potential problem. Understand why, what you're avoiding when you do that. I'm saying this because I'm really hoping beyond hope that people step up for themselves and really refine what they need to do, stick with what you need to do, and don't allow these attachments to come on you. Silver and gold coin should be plenty. They want to make it a gold-backed digital system? Fine, let them have that. Let them have all their instruments that they create as a fiat system. Let them have that. Do not participate in it. It's a third rail to being free. The potential devastating differences between CBDCs and stable coins. And this, we get back into redefining even the more distinct problem of the third-party liability. And remember, third-party not attached to government has no protections in the Constitution as well. Although often confused and similar in function, they are drastic differences between central bank digital currencies and stablecoins, in spite of both aiming to combine the convenience of digital payments with the stability of trading fiat money. They have fundamental differences in issuer backing, governance, and use cases. A CBDC is a fiat legal tender. A CBDC is a digital liability of a country's central bank. It represents a direct claim on the central bank. Just like a paper note, banknote, it is considered legal tender. In contrast, stablecoins are typically issued by private entities and work much like a money market fund. While many stablecoins strive to maintain a one-to-one peg with a fiat currency, they are not legal tender. Instead, they rely on market confidence in the user's ability to redeem tokens for the promised value. Promised value. Confidence, folks. Like in confidence men. You trust these monetary pirates? So again, I suggest you get the links and familiarize yourself with what is going on in this, in case you just wanted to avoid what you're hearing about all this, what they're putting all Trump. I just can't imagine how people are missing all this. And don't underestimate that private equity that we are hearing about more and more. Private equity investing in things what these companies may do with this, as it destroys American businesses. It's like the corporate raiders of the past. Really similar. They're doing it different ways, and they have different outcomes. And this private equity destroying investment is really close if Trump signs the order to tap your 401ks. That's right. You heard it. 401ks are going to be tapped by private equity. Or as I responded to Tiffany Cianci, the Vino mom, who, she's been fighting this private equity takeover her own business. Found out a ton. Really knows a lot. Whole lot more than I even thought about in all of this. And what they're doing. And how they're moving so close right now. They've been advocating to take your 401ks. And essentially, they can do the stablecoin treatment to it. This is BTWRLM638. And she wrote, just as you get a link again here to read. It's a 12-part thread, she says. The private equity bubble has popped and Trump is delivering the bailout that they've been begging for. Trump is planning an executive order to order $12.2 trillion in 401ks to private equity. This isn't about opportunity, it's a bailout for billionaires. And so you need to read this link from her and understand, listen to her video, listen very carefully on how the setup is being made. What's going on and what Trump's doing for the billionaire boys, again, not you, that asking Trump in a response to that, to her, how does agreeing to this plunder make America great again, POTUS? Is this what you meant by making America great again, real Donald Trump? You were saved to do this to the people? Yeah, that's probably not going to play too well. I want you to maybe refresh your memory with that statement once you read listen to what she says. They're going to raid your 401ks if this goes through. There's a couple things you still can do, those of you that are invested in those. What I want you to also notice is what's going on in the back room deals that are going on to plunder the entire system and how they move from place to place, opportunity to opportunity. That can't be done when you go to gold and silver coin, hard, sound money currency. Stay out of this digital thing. Don't allow it to be digitalized, is the other thing. They can't do that when it's in your pocket. This is why my problem when I started reading the Texas legal tender gold and silver laws there. They were going to allow a digitization from the Treasury. This is no different when they do that. The Treasury holds all the gold. You don't. is not you holding the gold. And that's the problem. And that's the point. And also, those that want to own and control it all, even to waste and destruction, the method, folks, replays over and over in different ways. It's all ours. The Israeli parliament voted to annex the West Bank and of the Jordan River. The Knesset of Israel, not the United States, the Knesset of Israel, voted for the annexation of the West Bank and the Jordan River, justifying it with a historic and spiritual right. A resolution stating that these territories are Judea and Samaria, an integral part of the historical, cultural, and spiritual homeland of the Jewish people, was adopted by a majority of 71 votes of Knesset deputies. But that's all a lie. So, just cuz. The West Bank of Jordan River, including East Jerusalem, according to the decision of the UN Security Council of 1947, was to become part of the Arab Palestine. In 1948 to 1967, it was annexed by Jordan, since 1967 by Israel. Israeli media claimed that this step, quote, will not have specific consequences. No consequences either for the land theft. No accountability. But what's my concern? That's what happens every day in the US of A, isn't it? No accountability? Oh, maybe Obama now? And I say, and? That's all you got? What a bunch of gullible dupes. And in that little bit of story, I'm not going to touch that one yet. Not that I may even touch it at all. It's a bit harsh to be coming out to blaming somebody through the NSA administrator claiming treason is a fact. And not coming out as charges from the DOJ is another paw pull for the cat litter in the cover-up. It'll be very interesting to see how this comes out and all that they're doing. But no, we're land thieves. We're just going to come and take more land. We're property thieves. We're money thieves. There's no law stopping us. In fact, we're going to get the people to write the laws that empower us to do so. In a follow-up study on the reports I did that said, well, more Palestinians have been taken as they take over there than officially admitted. Harvard report, the hidden numbers behind the Gaza real death toll. Israel's disappeared around 377,000 Palestinians in Gaza since 2023. A recent report prepared by Garb Yaakov, a professor at Ben-Gurion University of the Negev in Israel, and published on the President and Fellows of Harvard College Dataverse website, has substantiated what critics of Israel's actions in Gaza have long asserted regarding the actual number of individuals killed, taken by Israel in the Gaza Strip. Just cuz, folks. The report suggests the real number significantly surpasses the official reported death toll, and as victims who are buried under debris of dismembered or not included in the mainstream reports. And I'll scroll down to the key explaining the finding, because you have to look very carefully and do some math to see it. The 377,000 figure is not stated in the study, but derived from being observant. Part 2, we will scroll down and read this part. The unspoken number. The Gazans are missing 377,000. So remember, you're not going to see that number. And this becomes an interesting another analysis in ourselves. As damning as the legal analysis is, the population data contained within the report maps points to a far greater catastrophe. Before the conflict, the population of Gaza Strip was approximately 2.227 million. And this is the things you have to have in you to know, because they're not. Some of these things may not be understood by the report itself. The Garb report includes maps displaying IDF estimates for the populations remaining in what are considered the three primary enclaves. The numbers are as follows. Gaza City, 1 million. Mawasi, 0.5 million. Central, 0.35 million. The total of these official estimates is 1.85 million people. Simple arithmetic reveals a horrifying gap. 2.227 million minus 1.85 million leaves 377,000 people unaccounted for. The number is more than six times the casualty figures commonly discussed in media reports. While some of these individuals may be displaced in rubble-strewn landscapes outside the main enclaves, the sheer scale of this discrepancy, derived from the occupying power's own population assessments, is staggering. It suggests a demographic catastrophe, whether from direct casualties, starvation, or disease, far exceeding what the world has been led to believe. And then I'll let you read the rest of this exposé. Again, a lot more to read. I can just barely touch the surface on some of this. I have a link to the study that will be in the blogcaster for you to see it, or wherever you find the description, you might find more links that Sound puts out for Linktree. But the lesson here also is how easy it can be to overlook facts when they aren't explicitly stated, as if they were there, not put out there to hide the fact. But they're represented nonetheless when you're observant to them. And this is, again, having a background thought of knowledge that you apply, and that's the point. So I went to this report, I went to the study, and I quickly went through to simply verify the information being accurate. And when I did that, I missed the connection and had to go back through much more slowly to verify the unstated number is accurate. And I realized this is also then testing what quality of witness we are. Do we engage the information, or do we merely accept it? And by that observation, we have to ask, which one are you? So the link I have for ease in referring to the article to allow you to do the math breakdown by the area, you need to go look at page 5. So I've given you a link to the whole document, and then I gave you a link to the page 5 that you can go see the maps. And start looking at what he's talking about. Go back to that article, find out how to decipher. Very interesting how simple the deception can be made, how small the numbers were put up on the maps to read, and how easy it would be just to gloss over that little detail. And taking it all before you didn't kill yourself, invasion of the body snatchers, harvested alive, sinister shift in organ procurement across the U.S., and I have to say maybe as exampled by the Ukraine, don't you think? Throughout the U.S., people have faced rushed or premature organ removal, some still gasping, crying, or showing signs of life. With over 100,000 patients on transplant wait lists, the rush to meet demand has fueled a pattern of reckless decision, putting donor safety on the line. Whistleblowers of 19 states have described disturbing cases, including drug use, to speed up death. The practice of retrieving organs after circulatory death, not brain death, has surged, now making up a third of all donations. Surge, just like an illness and disease, right, folks? These patients aren't brain dead, often still alive, but judged unlikely to recover. When supply runs low, ethics gets cut. Again, the mentality of take, 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 just 'cause. Expedience. It's so easy. So convenient. It's the digital gulag, it sounds like to me. Remember, Obamacare, we had AI coming to decide whether or not you were worthy. And I made a comment a long time ago, when they find out your organs are worth more than your rest of your value of your life, or what they can derive from you, maybe that's when that happens too. And because, again, the takers have it, the billionaires' club wins, it seems. They get the laws that they need in order to continue the exploitation. Law doesn't really mean anything. The balance of laws don't matter. But we hear it from Trump again. We're banning wokeness from AI models. Now, again, it's all tied into what the future that they want, how the future is going. All the discussion I've talked about today, when it talks to blockchain and digital platforms, is going to be using AI. It's genius, folks. Executive order is a part of a broader plan that removes restrictions from the industry. President Trump unveiled the AI Action Plan and signed three related executive orders on Wednesday intended to make the U.S. a leader in artificial intelligence. By and large, the White House is giving a green light to tech companies to advance the technology by removing what it calls, quote, red tape and onerous regulations. Two of the executive orders, for example, focus on making it easier to build AI data centers and to export American AI products. And let me just inject here, if you haven't paid attention, these AI data centers are now using more power than countries. And they're going to give preferential treatment. And the only thought I have after that is the Matrix is not a movie. Especially when they start tapping into your energy. The third executive order, however, contains what Axios calls a potential time bomb for companies, a ban on wokeness in AI chatbots. So how does Trump think, if he does think he can ban freedom of speech and of thought? Quote, once and for all, we're getting rid of woke. Is that okay? Trump told an audience of industry leaders. The American people do not want woke Marxist lunacy in the AI models, Trump said. Former President Biden had established toxic diversity, equity, and inclusion ideology as a guiding principle of American AI development. And if he can ban wokeness, why does his ban hammer only reach Marxist lunacy and not the hyphenatedly inspired, undiverse, inequitably non-inclusive chosen ideology woke lunacy consuming his administration? The problem is that defining what's woke can be a subjective matter. The mandate, quote, poses thorny technical challenges and raises questions about who decides what counts as an acceptable answer. Quote, the metrics of what make an AI model politically biased are contentious and open to interpretation, however, and therefore may allow the administration to use the order to target companies at its discretion. Remember that blacklist, folks, that we talked about for stablecoins. It's a worry also voiced by the Center for Democracy and Technology, demanding that developers refrain from ideological bias or be neutral in their models is as an impossible vague standard that the administration will be able to weaponize for its own ideological ends. You heard me say that they're woke right, correct? So he says it right there too, but no, in his way. But right and left wokeness is a one-way street to an error pronation. AI or pronation. But hey, with your ideological self-bias grok, there's a sucker born every minute, right, P.T. Barnabas? But hey, let's just change the name and pretend it's a genius, and no one will notice. And, oh wait, hot off the behind a woodshed teletype using my official BTW Acme thermomits, for that scorching hot news traveling at hypersonic speed put to print from the You Can't Make This Stuff Up department, why U.S. President Donald Trump wants to rename artificial intelligence. The U.S. President was in attendance at the Artificial Intelligence Summit in Washington when he decided to make this linguistic query during a speech. Quote, around the globe, everyone is talking about artificial intelligence. I find that too artificial. I can't stand it. I don't even like the name, Trump said, tossing his hands up in the air. You know, I don't like anything that's artificial. So could we straighten that out, please? He requested, pointing to someone in the audience. We should change the name, Trump then added through the audience laughter. I actually mean that. I don't like the name artificial anything. It's not artificial. It's genius. It's pure genius, he said, of the developing technology. I don't know who's blowing blue pixie smoke in your face, but no, AI is no genius. It's not even intelligence. I know! I can't believe it's not butter either. So I agree with you. Describing it being artificial is a lot of over the top, sort of like promoting fiat currency as money. Can we just call both of them fraud and be done with it? Besides, if you don't like artificial, how do you eat McDonald's food? but recommend a synthetic mRNA jabs at warp speed that were predicated on an artificial infectious agent, never lawfully demonstrated to be non-fraudulent. Or how then, that you abhor of artificial, can you support the illegal belligerent occupation of Palestine? I mean, beyond that artificial, woke, ultra-right, culturally appropriated, hyphenated, chosen identity committed genocide. Does Trump have shares in an unlimited supply of cat litter for all these cover-ups? And how much of a genius is it not? ChatGPT gets crushed at chess by a 1 MHz Atari 2600. AI models have no clue about what chess actually is and which moves are valid. Despite being hailed as the next step in the evolution of artificial intelligence, large language models are no smarter than a piece of rotten wood. Every now and then, some odd experiment or test reminds everyone that so-called intelligent AI doesn't actually exist if you're living outside a tech company quarterly report. A cycle exact emulation of the Atari 2600 CPU running at a mere and meager 1.19 MHz is more than enough to utterly humiliate ChatGPT in the game of chess. Citrix engineer Robert J. Caruso conducted the funny little experiment over the weekend, pitting OpenAI's mighty chatbot against the virtual Atari 2600 console emulated by Stella. It didn't end well for the chatbot. Caruso reportedly got the idea from chatbot itself after chatting with the bot about the history of AI and chess. OpenAI's service volunteered to play Atari Chess, which Caruso assumed it referred to video chess, the only chess title ever released for the Atari 2600. Despite being given a basic layout of the board, the identity of the pieces, ChatGPT struggled. The bot confused rooks for bishops, missed obvious pawn forks, and made a series of baffling blunders, according to Caruso. At one point, ChatGPT even blamed external factors like the abstract symbols used by video chess to depict the pieces for its inability to keep track of the game's state. For 90 minutes, I had to stop it from making awful moves and correct the board awareness multiple times per turn, the engineer said about ChatGPT's performance against an emulated CPU console from the 1970s. The bot apparently kept asking to restart the game in hopes of improving the performance, but was ultimately defeated by an 8-bit chess engine. That 1 MHz CPU should at best be able to think one or two moves ahead, while ChatGPT relies on an endless army of modern, power-hungry GPUs to keep its chat service running. And yet, the 1 MHz CPU won, thrashing the chatbot at beginner level. Caruso's experiment is a useful reminder about the LLM models actually are a complex heuristic-based black box search engine designed to constantly please the final user with some sort of captivating result. They don't know anything, have no reasoning or deduction capabilities, and certainly they have no intelligence on their own, and they absolutely suck at chess. I never owned an Atari 2600 back in the day, though I did spend some glorious afternoons with my mighty Intellivision console. Next time I'll try to humble the ChatGPT by making it play a round of battle chess on an emulated replica of my first x86 machine, an 8286 running at a blazing 16 MHz. So, surely the U.S. government can't possibly let such a genius go to waste. Tech execs, Uncle Sam wants you for the U.S. Army. The U.S. Army announced Friday that it was forming a new Executive Innovation Corps. It aims to recruit senior tech executives to serve as part-time advisors in the Army Reserve. The CTOs of Meta and Palantir were among the first big-name recruits. Some of the U.S. Army's latest recruits might be a little different from those you'd normally find rocking up the basic training. The Army announced Friday that it was establishing a Detachment 201. Like Event 201 sounds like here. Detachment 201, dubbed the Executive Innovation Corps, to bridge what it called the commercial military tech gap. And that some of Silicon Valley's top executives were among the first to enlist. And wouldn't you know it, U.S. Army appoints Palantir Meta OpenAI execs as a lieutenant colonels. Four senior executives of Palantir, Meta, and OpenAI have been formally appointed lieutenant colonels in the U.S. Army following the creation of a special unit. So exceptional, folks. Special unit. Wonder if they come in on the yellow bus, little yellow bus. Special unit created for rich big tech mavens seeking military leadership roles. I don't know what more to say about this. Is that fascism or not? I think we see it right there, isn't it? Public-private partnershiping in a military capacity. Fascinating. Right in front of us, folks. All during Trump. On June 13th, the Army announced the creation of a Detachment 201, otherwise known as Executive Innovation Corps, which it describes as a new initiative designed to fuse cutting-edge tech expertise with the military innovation. Four ultra-wealthy executives from top tech companies were sworn into the unit ahead of President Trump's heavily promoted military parade, which was itself sponsored by Palantir. The Army's top spokesman declared that Detachment 201 was being created to bring in tech innovation executives and leaders to help the Army with a recruitment and a subsequent training of tech-focused people by bringing private sector know-how into uniform. Detachment 201 is supercharging efforts like the Army Transformation Initiative, which aims to make the force leaner, smarter, and more lethal, the Army wrote in an official statement. So supercharging this genius means going from less than Atari 2600 smarts to military intelligence. And that's probably about right. Or wrongly right, Trump. Whether it's right or wrong, it's time to go after people, says Trump. In the Oval Office on Tuesday, Trump pivoted after a question on the Epstein files to call for severe consequences for Obama and some of his former top officials over Director of National Intelligence Tulsi Gabbard's claim of treasonous conspiracy by the former administration. Gabbard's accusations have been met with major skepticism by numerous critics, with some accusing the administration of pushing the claims to distract from MAGA, the MAGA fallout over the Epstein files. Trump, however, is completely sold, claiming Obama got caught while also misidentifying Hillary Clinton as the ex-wife of a president. She continues to be married to the former president, Bill Clinton. Trump said, the witch hunt that you should be talking about is that they caught President Obama. What they did to this country in 2016, starting in 2016, but going up to 2020 of the election, they tried to rig the election and they got caught. There should be a very severe consequences for that. When we caught Hillary Clinton, I said, you know what? Let's not go too far. It's the ex-wife of a president, and I thought it was sort of terrible. I let her off the hook, and I'm very happy I did. But it's time to start. After what they did to me, and whether it's right or wrong, it's time to go after people. Obama was caught directly. So Trump believes some are above the law, and he's happy about that. But after what they did to me, it sounds vindictive, retaliatory. Are the homegrown listening to Trump right now? Right or wrong? Time to go after people? Right or wrong? To go after any of we the people? For what they did? Are people listening to this vindictive lack of regard for law or accountability? Right or wrong? Wrongly? That's not a problem for people? And something else Trump didn't care about doing wrongly. Scientists discover Pfizer COVID jab linked to major eye damage. Scientists have discovered that Pfizer COVID-19 vaccine may increase the risk of eye damage, leading to vision loss. The new study specifically examined how the vaccine... You know what I'm thinking here, folks? affected patients' corneas, the clear front part of the eye that allows light to enter. In 64 people, scientists in Turkey measured changes in the cornea's inner layer called the endothelium before taking the first Pfizer doses and 2 months after receiving the second. And I read that, and I hope you thought about it, and I thought about it. I think it was kind of important to think about. How did they know to start testing before the jab? There it is, right there. In the short term, these changes suggested the Pfizer vaccine may temporarily weaken the endothelium, even though patients didn't suffer clear vision problems during the study. For people with healthy eyes, these small changes likely won't affect vision right away. However, if the scientists find that these changes last for years, they could lead to corneal swelling or blurry vision, especially in those with pre-existing eye problems or people who have had a cornea transplant. A thicker cornea and reduced cell density could contribute to eye conditions like corneal edema, bullous keratopathy, and corneal decompression, which can all cause permanent vision loss in severe cases, especially if left untreated. Specifically, the team found that the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine caused a patient's cornea to go from 528 to 542 micrometers in thickness, or roughly 0.0208 inches or 0.0213 inches. This is a roughly 2% increase in micrometers. A slightly thicker cornea isn't automatically harmful. The cornea that can thicken temporarily due to inflammation, fluid buildup, or stress on the endothelium from minor illnesses or injuries to the eyes. If it stays too thick for months or years, however, it could make the cornea less clear, potentially affecting vision. By comparing these measurements taken before vaccination to those after, the researchers could see if the Pfizer vaccine was influencing the health of the eyes. The new data is potentially harmful side effects linked to Pfizer COVID vaccine, added to a growing list of concerns the Trump administration has highlighted. He wasn't concerned before this, was he? In May, the U.S. Food and Drug Administration forced Pfizer and Moderna to use expanded warnings about the risks of heart damage that tied to COVID-19 vaccines. The shots, previously at Warp Speed, included warning labels about the rare chance of patients suffering myocarditis, inflammation of the heart muscle, and pericarditis, inflammation of sac lining surrounding the heart. Where were these all before at Warp Speed? Well, right about now, you should be yelling from the rooftops. Safe and effective, right, Donald Bullstein Trumpenstein? Again, if you have had the shot, it's not something to gloat over because we didn't get the shot. You need to work out how to get rid of that protein that may or may not still be in your system, that may or not have caused damage. And there's nutrients and supplements you can take in order to help you work that through. Go do research on the internet. There's a lot of people doing a lot of study in that. And it really is down to the whoever it is. These preconditions that you may have cause a difference in what you're going to make, what might work for you in doing this, in clearing your body from it. Well, just as a thought, because it may be missed, apparently nicotine attaches to one of the receptors that the spike protein likes. And it's much more aggressive at attaching to that. And what that mechanism is if you plug that receptor with the nicotine, the spike protein component can't attach. It allows the body to see the thing that can't attach and clear it out over time. So you put a lid on that receptor, and now something that's much more tightly connected, such as the nicotine, and the other part can't attach, and then it gets swept away over time. But that's the kind of techniques that we're looking at, have people to do. But let's not wallow in the misery of the others that won't get behind the woodshed relative to all that knowledge that we gave years and years ago. Let's move on to a brighter note, more of that not a spectator sport thing. Every time a farm wins, a town wins. How a 21-year-old in North Dakota brought food freedom back to the farm. At 21, Dawson Hole didn't change the law. He rewrote the future of food freedom in North Dakota. Backed by cows, common sense, and coalition building, he legalized raw milk and cream without corporate lobbying or culture war noise. This is how a farm kid outmaneuvered the bureaucracy and lit a path every state can follow. It starts with a rotary parlor and 1,000 cows. Before the sun comes up in Mandan, North Dakota, Dawson is managing crews, driving the semi to pick up corn or straw, and fielding legislative calls from the Capitol. He's 21. He's the youngest elected lawmaker in state history. And this year, he overturned decades of dairy regulation to legalize a farm raw milk across North Dakota. Quote, I mean, I could go buy sushi. I could buy a steak that's medium rare. I could go buy lettuce that I'm going to consume raw. But I can't go to my local farmer and buy milk? That's not a campaign line. That's a farmer speaking through exhaustion and conviction after grinding through early morning feed schedules, $0 lobbying, and Republican supermajority that wasn't quite ready to take on the FDA playbook. He did it anyway. The dairy that made the lawmaker, Paul, wasn't supposed to win in 2022. He ran at 18 years old against a 10-year incumbent, but behind him stood a 1,000-cow family operation hemorrhaging viability. North Dakota was losing 2 dairies a year. Of the few that remained, most were either selling out or consolidating. The cultural knowledge of raw milk, let alone the economic lifeline it could offer, was slipping away. Let me interject on that. That's almost, I think, every productive life, whether you're a farmer, a rancher, a miner, a logger, all that goes away, all that knowledge. But it's quite an extensive experiential knowledge that you have to run these things and do these, is being lost. Right now in the mining sector, we're getting all the old miners, they're all turning, older than 80 and 90, all those engineers, they're all going to be dying, and there's nobody coming up to fill the hole. Nobody. There's not nobody interested. And so this is a very serious problem in the future, for the future. We had people doing herd shares where they'd sell someone a portion of the cow so that they could own the milk. It was convoluted. It wasn't scalable. So he drafted a House bill, 1515, in 2023. It was a short bill, just 2 pages. It stripped away the herd share games and gave farmers legal clarity to sell raw milk directly from the farm to consumers. The opposition came hard. State health officials warned about E. coli. National food safety groups began sniffing around. But Hall came armed with history. North Dakota reported very few raw milk illnesses, only a handful over decades, and state officials confirmed nearly all were tied to poor handling, not legal farm sales. More importantly, he grounded the bill in the most unassailable principles. Voluntary choice. Quote, nobody's grabbing this off of grocery store shelves by accident. You have to drive to a farm. You're having a conversation with a farmer. You're making that decision. The bill passed 83-10 in the House and 45-0 in the Senate. It was signed into law April 2023, and there was just one problem. While raw milk was now legal to sell on farm, raw cream, butter, and kefir were not. The bureaucratic logic? If it was processed at all, even by skimming, the law didn't apply. So Hall came back with House Bill 1131. He didn't make it a crusade. He made it a clarification. Cream is milk. Milk is food. And kefir, with its long fermentation history, posed no new danger. Once again, the legislature agreed, passed 82-9 in the House, unanimously in the Senate. The expanded law took effect in June of 2025. Quote, the margins on raw milk are better. The consumers are loyal. This isn't a threat to the industry. It's a rebirth. That wasn't posturing. Hall still helps manage the cows. He still rotates logistics and drives the semi. And when a constituent calls about food sovereignty or school lunch reform, he picks up, sometimes while hauling supplies across county lines. He's not blowing up the system. he's cracking the doors open for others. The quiet blueprint? In a year of federal overreach, food inflation, and endless public health redefinitions, North Dakota didn't wait for permission. It passed raw milk laws rooted in common sense. It expanded them. It did it with no media circus, no culture war headlines, and almost no opposition once the facts were made plain. That's the Hall model. Don't yell, rewrite. Don't posture, produce. Don't beg, build. Every time a farm wins, a town wins. That's not a campaign rhetoric. That's the sound of a young man who still smells like the parlor when he shows up in a committee. This isn't a trend, it's a return, and the milk hasn't even finished pouring yet. Not a spectator sport indeed. Good for him. Maybe there's an example for someone to reproduce the effort that he's done there. As I said, it's going to be replicated. As I've said before, when you get involved, you find the people that can help you. He became one of the people to help himself. And so there's a different avenues to get things done when we need to get them done. Coming back on another follow-up as a report I did quite a number of episodes ago, and again, exposure, not just being a spectator, getting involved. The heading Flock U. Flock removes states from national lookup tool after ICE and abortion searches revealed. Those reports that I said from Texas. Flock Automatic License Plate Reader, ALPR, company, with a presence of thousands of communities across the United States, has stopped agencies across the country from searching cameras inside Illinois, California, and Virginia. The dramatic move comes after 404 Media revealed local police departments were repeatedly performing lookups around the country on behalf of ICE, and Texas officers searched cameras nationwide for a woman who self-administered an abortion, and lawmakers recently signed a new law in Virginia. Ordinarily, Flock allows agencies to opt into a national lookup database where agencies in one state can access data collected in another as long as they also share their own data. This practice violates multiple state laws which bar sharing of ALPR data out of state or it being accessed for immigration or health care purposes. The changes also come after a wave of similar coverage in local and state-focused media outlets, with many replicating our reporting to learn more about the agencies are accessing Flock cameras in their communities and for what purpose. As it used to be of the press, see something, say something. The criminals don't stop until you stop them. In a little bit different way, as in North Dakota, the laws are just applied. We didn't change the law, we just made it more correct. We applied the law. We've made that important. We educated people. And so, we're not going to be a block again, this third-party liability looked at the problem, found without, again, they didn't find it on their own. They found it by the press stepping up and making the report. It could be anybody now making the report, getting some traction. And now they're not breaking the law like they were before. Again, a lot of this goes on until they're stopped, because a lot of people don't even know, like Trump. He's just on, violating left laws left after right until he gets stopped. And I don't know what more to say about that. Why did he go that direction? And on to saying something about the penalty phase of the justice system. UK free speech flashpoint Lucy bill lets public challenge harsh sentences after Connolly case. A new push to let the public challenge court sentences without expensive legal hurdles is gaining traction in Parliament, driven by the case of Lucy Connolly, a mother jailed for a fiery social media post. Reform UK's Richard Tice is spearheading the effort with a proposal he's calling Lucy's Bill, a piece of legislation that would empower ordinary citizens to petition the Criminal Cases Review Commission if they believe someone's punishment is unjust, either too light or too severe. If 500 people signed such a petition, the CCRC would be required to examine the case. After an 8-week review, the commission could send it onto the Court of Appeals for further scrutiny. Tice sees this as a needed safety valve in a system where the public currently has no means to challenge excessive sentence, even though they can already request reviews of these deemed too lenient. The bill is named after Lucy Connolly, who was sentenced in October 2024 to over 2 years in prison for a social media post. Her comment, laced with fury and expletives, was swiftly deleted and followed by an apology, but it still landed her behind bars, a decision Tice believes reveals the creeping reach of political-motivated prosecution. Connolly's harsh sentencing has become a lightning rod that has drawn international attention to the UK's severe erosion of free speech rights. Connolly has reportedly been left with bruises after being dragged up 3 flights of stairs while serving her prison sentence, Tice has said. Tice, who visited Connolly at HMP Peterborough, reported that the former child carer has also been stripped of privileges by prison officials. He claims that this treatment appears to be part of a broader pattern of punitive actions that are politically motivated, aimed at provoking a response from someone already under immense pressure. She's been manhandled, left with bruises, and starved of food. Tice has alleged, asserting that this harsh treatment is designed to provoke her. He plans to visit Connolly at HMP Peterborough to check on her well-being and assure her that she hasn't been abandoned by her supporters. Tice argues that Connolly's sentence was part of a broader trend of selective justice aimed at individuals with unpopular or political sensitive views. Quote, the whole point of justice in a democracy is that it must be seen to be natural and fair. And as I hear that and read that, I understand that's the way it's supposed to be everywhere. And I do believe there may be mechanisms to allow that for someone to complain. If there's not, maybe that's the new raw milk for us. And I say that in the context of watching this digital gulag, this Siberian gulag come upon us, where AI or some bureau rat decides for us based on our digital identity and all the records that they keep now. They said they agreed at Azerbaijan. They're going to have, it's not going to be on your chip. No, that's just the beginning information to make the connection. They're going to have it in the state coffers. The state archives for them to go through perpetually and forever. And so we would take note of these last few tabs, content in these, to understand that we better start putting in place the things that allow some direct effect to counter when things go wrong, give us a bit of a chance. And I don't understand, again, why a habeas doesn't work in that regard, but There it is. I mean, at some point, the way that they keep you can be challenged that way too. But if it is that we need an explicit statement in black and white, as I said, they follow the black and white, whether we agree with it or whether they want to agree that we agree with it, that it's the way it's supposed to be. That's not what I'm saying. At least we have to get it printed down because they won't follow it. They don't have to follow it if it's not already there. So, again, it's up to us. There are some examples in today's episodes that this is not a spectator sport. While we have the system that we have, the establishment that we're under, there are things that we can do. It's certainly not what I would have ever thought being, certainly not the integrity and the trust and confidence I would have put into it years ago. And there seems to be no check and balance for any of that as we're watching. And one thing that I think is good about this thing with Trump, he is in a way the loose cannon, and he's not, but the loose cannon part is what's helping us to watch and see, I'm hoping lots of people are, how much lack of United States of America, how much lack of this republic that we are, how much lack of the separation and the independence and the check and balances there are. And I hope, and I don't know if this comes in time, but I hope people really start thinking about this place needs to be as Dawson did. We don't remove the law. We alter it enough to fix it. And I ask those that would say no, what better idea do you have? And I mean beyond the Second Amendment, because I think we got that answer in Lincoln's time. And again, you look around and you see right woke and left woke, and those are never coming together. Again, we see a little bit what it does. The Epstein matter helps to bring those together. Trump is losing a lot of support right now because of the way they literally they just handled something incorrectly. But the meaning behind that and that in that is very important to everyone. And there's lots of talk that, you know, Trump doing this thing and he's got the Democrats now demanding the files. Okay, play that game. It's a uniparty. They all have their reasons for outing and using the political advantage. I'm more interested to find out how we got here in such a bad way. Who done it? And where's the accountability? When's that coming? And that it comes in order. And then we figure, okay, now that, we've got the accountability, what do we need to make sure it doesn't happen again? And there's lots of ideas out there on how that would happen. I'm not going to go through right now. Again, it would take some discussion. I don't see the quality of discussion that I think I would like to see. And I think we're too much controlled and separated by the internet. But when the government handles it, you get put into that database, you're in one spot. And so we, the people, become the one unit they can handle all the time, and they'd handle us individually. And that's real easy to do. And so they're working the system the way it needs, that system of control it needs. And we're seeing the military, as I've been saying, is involved, and it's now we're seeing the fascism, high-tech now enlisted as officers. What a game, what stupidity. They're already doing that anyway, but now it's being obvious. They're laughing at us. And you're watching it for this thing form up and be the control grid that it is, and it's really military, just like the great Kobe swindle. So take some thought in some of these things. I send you to links on this episode. I'm sending you to some links to read the background of it. A lot of articles are very deep in explanation. And there are these things that we're looking at in those contents are the gateway, the doorways, the places that they'll allow you to step through and embrace. But whatever it takes, whatever the deal that negotiation allows you to accept it, to get your buy-in is all they care about. They don't care that it's a lie or the truth or that whatever, it's whatever they say that makes you feel that you can participate. And that's as simple as this is. And if you don't have the knowledge, you don't have a research base behind you to understand, you don't bring to the maps a knowledge of the condition that you're looking at, that the maps speak to, that you do the math to find out there's a secret right there that they're not talking about. It's the fraud of omission. There's a bigger story of the amount of death and destruction going on around you. If you don't bring that in yourself to the table, to what you're looking at, the perception, they're exploiting every bit of it. This has been BTW RLM 638. I'll be with you next week. Tech Diffs for Nature Willing.
Echoes call, the hour is near. Behind the woodshed, the truth you'll hear. Every Sunday, the clock strikes three. Hal's voice rolls like thunder, fierce and free. Pull up a chair, lean in close. Lessons to learn, dose by dose. Behind the woodshed.
truce, the ace. As the sun sets, the truth still reigns in house words, freedom sings. Join us next week, heed the call, behind the woodshed standing tall.